Hi, I'm Sima Shapiro, the host of the new Contemporary Lifestyle Radio Show for Women Over 40, featuring everything about your health, wealth, children, happiness, and anything else of interest to you, the listener. Please stay tuned. Hi, I'm Sima Shapiro. Welcome to For Women Over 40. Today we'll be talking with social psychologist and a mother of one, Susan Newman, about the one-child syndrome. What are some of the factors contributing to this choice, and what are some of the positive and negative outcomes for these children and their families? Dr. Susan Newman is a social psychologist and author of 15 books. She is the stepmother of four children and mother of one who focuses on problems affecting the family. She writes a parenting blog for Psychology Today magazine. Some of her many books include Little Things Long Remembered, The Case for the Only Child, The Joys and Challenges of Raising Your One and Only, Under One Roof Again. So welcome, Dr. Newman.
Good to be here.
Thank you. So why do you believe so many people have chosen to have one child in this country? And what are some of the factors you think contribute to this?
Lately being in the last 20 years, there are a lot of factors. One is that women are marrying later, having their babies later. It used to be women married at 21 or had their children even earlier than that. And now the mean age for women is up at 27. But the increase with women over 35 is huge. Women in their 40s are having babies, and often that means secondary infertility. Another factor is we have very bad, poor maternity leaves in this country versus a country like Sweden that gives 13 months, not weeks, months of paid leave. And then if you look at the economy and factor that in, it's another reason why. Today, 77% of women with young children are working. And it's very hard, as your listeners probably know and you know, to raise a family and hold a job. So those are some of the more powerful motives. Plus the cost is very expensive. If you have a mean income in between $57,000 and $98,000, you're looking at roughly $286,000 just to get your child to age 18.
Yes.
My favorite number in all that is $46,000 of those dollars are for food.
I'm sorry, I thought you were going to say $46,000 were for therapy.
Yeah, you might need a little therapy. Well, you probably need a little therapy if you have a dozen children.
Right.
You know, and nobody likes to put a price tag on kids, but, you know, when you're talking about why there's this huge trend towards having one child, those are some of the key reasons. I mean, and you could add in divorce and remarriage and new kinds of couplings, you know, using a surrogate if you're a gay or homosexual couple. These are all part of why more and more women are choosing to have one child.
This is a topic I seem to be circling a lot. We spoke to two public policy experts from Washington, D.C. about women returning to the workplace. Last week, we did a show on childless or child-free women. And so all of these complex choices are becoming more and more prevalent. Would you agree?
Oh, yes. There's no question. I agree with that. I mean, it's so hard to hold a job, worry about your family, worry about feeding your family, educating your family. You know, it's a weighty issue. And because of all that's going on, a lot of women are saying, I don't want any part of this.
Yes.
You know, the number of childless women keeps growing, as does the number choosing to have one child.
Absolutely. What was some of the allure for you of examining this topic from so many different directions?
Well, I was married before, and you mentioned this in the introduction, and I have four stepchildren from my first marriage. When I remarried, I said, I'm having a baby. This that was the beginning of the reason. The real reason was I don't think my son was 4 months old, and people started saying, when are you having another?
Yes.
And the questions just kept coming. And I finally said, why is everyone asking this? What is wrong with having one child? So that was what got me totally into the topic and saying, I absolutely have to find out why people are saying this, why there's such a stigma about one child, why everybody thinks a family with two is the absolute perfect number.
Do you think that ideology is generational?
It's generational, but like all myths and stereotypes, you can't get rid of them.
Yes.
They're embedded. I mean, we're still thinking, we as a culture, in 1950 terms when we said a boy for you and a girl for me and a house with a white picket fence. That may have been part of a song, I'm not sure. And that has just stuck. But the numbers tell a different story. The numbers show that while that's what everybody thinks is the ideal family, that's not what they're doing.
You said stereotypical, which begs the next question. There are certainly stereotypes about what would be the best part of parenting an only child? And then there's the reality, what would be the best part of parenting an only child? Can you address both of those for me?
Yeah, well, the best part, clearly from the child's point of view, is that you have all your parents' time and attention, and you reap the benefits of all your parents' assets, everything they can afford more. It's not spread between different children. You can have more extracurricular activities. You can do more things. You can travel more often with your parents. It's much easier to pack up one child than two or three. So, you know, that advantage plays out later in life, because when you look at the studies, only children have a much higher achievement motivation, and they score slightly higher on intelligence. And that certainly makes sense when they have full advantage of their parents' time, attention, and resources.
Now, that would be in a perfect world. So are you giving me the stereotypical view or how your research shows it in real time?
Oh, no, that's what the research shows. That's not a figment of my imagination or anybody else's, but, you know, those are the facts.
But
firstborn and only children excel. In fact, 12 men walked on the moon, and, I forget the exact number, but a good portion of them were firstborn or only children.
Oh, wow. The stereotype would then say that an only child must be entitled, feeling full of themselves, feeling as if they are deserving, that they would be number one in all situations. Is that a true myth?
That is totally a true myth. That happens, and if that happens in any size family, and it has more to do with how the parents parent one child or four children than it does because there is one child in the house. I mean, you can teach your one child how to share, how to you reduce the sense of entitlement by saying, okay, you want this, this, and this, but you have to pick which thing you want. You can't have all three. So it's really parents, you know, deciding what their values are and imparting those values to the child. And that holds for any size family.
What are some of the negatives to having one child? And again, I'd like you to address it from a stereotypical point of view and then from real-time reality.
Well, the biggest negative probably is filling in that playtime, because there are no siblings in the house. Mom and dad, or mom or dad, have to get down on the floor more often and play with their child. And I think the other big negative is parents, mothers in particular, feeling guilty about not having a second child and not giving their child a sibling, And being susceptible to all the questions and the prodding and the stereotypes that have no basis in fact.
We're talking today with Dr. Susan Newman about one-child families. She's a social psychologist and the author of 15 books, predominantly on only children. I want to explore this a little bit longer and a little bit greater. Let's talk about it from the vantage point of a child. What would you presume they would feel would be the most positive asset and the most negative asset to being an only child?
That's interesting that you ask that, because what I found in my research is there's almost an even split about only children who absolutely adored it and only children who didn't love it so much. And the ones who didn't love it so much tend to be over 45 or 50 because they grew up in a generation when everybody had, not everybody, a lot of people had two families and the ideal was very prevalent. Those with siblings, when you talk to them, a lot of them say, I'd love to get rid of my siblings. One of the issues with how children feel is colored by, you know, what they see around them. And it all looks so good when you go to a neighbor's house and there are three kids and they're all playing happily. But the facts are that parents fantasize that their children will all get along. But in reality, and play together, they don't always get along. And sometimes there are great divisions. Kids just have personality mismatches, and they don't get along, and they don't play with each other. And often those personality differences carry on into adulthood. This, you know, one versus two or three or four could go either way. Parents can't control how their children will feel about their brothers and sisters.
Sure. I think I'd like to also circle back about shame and embarrassment, that I think that for many women, there is some shame associated with the fact that there isn't another child. And I think that in some cases, actually, they may not have had the opportunity to have another child or be able to have another child. By the same token, though, because female self-worth is often based on how many children you have, I think this is a powerful statement about some of the mothers and some of the issues they face with their only children. Would you agree?
I would agree with that, but I would say to mothers who desperately wanted another child and for whatever the reasons couldn't have one, that instead of focusing on what you want, be thrilled with what you have.
Sure.
And, you know, no matter what you wanted, everybody can have everything they want. And when a mother feels badly, is upset, feels guilty, particularly when there's one child, you have to be very sure as a parent that your only child doesn't know this, doesn't understand this, doesn't hear you talking about it, because the end result is that that child starts to believe that he or she is not enough,
sure.
That no matter what she does, no matter how hard she strives, she cannot please her parents.
Sure. I know for myself, I happen to be an only child, that many people over my lifetime have asked me, are you bratty? Are you lonely? Didn't you get all the presents you ever wanted? That is a heck of a heavy load to place on a child, when in fact, in my own personal experience, I'm neither of those things. What can somebody say if they're an only child and somebody addresses them like that?
Oh, really? With a question mark?
Well, I'm sorry. In my lifetime, I've said far more words than that, but thank you.
I don't think that kids ask that, in, you know, specifically. I remember years ago when my son was about 10, he had a friend over, and they were up in Andrew's bedroom, and then they came downstairs. And on the way home, this visitor child said to my friend, he's not spoiled at all. He doesn't have half the things that I have. You know, if lonely, by the way, is different than alone, And a lot of people confuse alone time with lonely time, and particularly parents. They're afraid if their child's sitting doing nothing, he's lonely. But that alone time is actually good for children. It encourages creativity. It teaches them how to fill their time and has them look into new areas. So, you know, for the only child to be alone is not a bad thing. And in terms of friendships, it turns out that the only child, by the time they get to middle school, have as many friends as children with siblings, and they're not lonely. You know, it's pretty hard to be lonely today.
Sure.
Kids are connected in 8 ways to Sunday with iPads and computers and texting and cell phones and so forth.
Sure.
And they're on them 24/7. So that issue of lonely is really not an issue anymore, but it's stuck in people's minds.
I do think, though, from my own experience, I know that friends who have just one child have often felt the need to bring them somewhere, to bring someone with them, along with them, for vacations or for a day trip, that in fact they feel almost obligated in not leaving their child alone or by themselves. Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah, well, I think that's an excellent idea because everybody has more fun. It frees up the parents. And one of my recommendations always is to socialize your child early. In the era when people lived on farms and kids didn't play together, it was hard. Now, with daycare and mommy care and pre-K and kindergarten, you know, children are exposed to other children very early, and that negates the bratty, lonely, entitled, because their little friends are going to ignore them, not invite them being the only child, if he or she is bratty and bossy. And children learn this pretty fast. So socialization is a key.
Sure. We're talking today to Dr. Susan Newman, who is a social psychologist and the author of 15 books predominantly focused on one-child families and only children. Do you have any stats for me about the trends of one-child families in other countries?
They're way ahead of us in a lot of countries. They're calling England the one-child nation.
Yes.
All of a sudden, out of nowhere, 50% of their population has one child.
Right. Mm-hmm.
In Canada, the number is up to 44%, I believe. And in countries like Italy and Germany, even India, the governments have been trying to get couples to have more children because their birth rates are so low.
Right.
So this is a worldwide phenomenon in developed countries. It's not just happening in the United States.
Do you have any thoughts about why that's occurring overseas?
Oh, probably for the same reasons that it's happening here. The economy, the cost of raising children, marrying later, more single mothers. It's harder to raise a child, I mean, certainly two children by yourself.
Sure.
Infertility factors. And then, you know, there's something I didn't mention earlier, which is divorce.
Yes.
You know, that's another reason.
Yes.
That, divorces tend to end after 7 years. And if you didn't have your child right away, chances are you're not having time to have a second one.
Do you have any greater stats on how the increase of one-child families will impact us in the United States economically or socially?
There's an increasing acceptance of the only child, so I don't think that's a problem. And economically, we have so, you know, the cultural mix of this country is enormous. And in many of the cultures, a larger family is still the family of choice. So my thinking at the moment is that this will level out with the family, you know, the big families offsetting the one-child families.
What steps can parents take to make sure their child does not exhibit negative behaviors associated with only children, and that they can not only keep them as healthy in their attachments as possible, but also in their self-esteem?
I mentioned earlier in the conversation that it's important to socialize the children early, that they have a good friend circle. Parents can also avoid what I call the fishbowl effect. When you have one child, it's very easy to see everything that child does. When there's a cookie missing, you know why it's missing. When your child's staying up too late, you're aware of it. You know, one thing I suggest is to kind of look the other way if it's not affecting your child's health or safety.
Hmm.
It's not going to hurt if she's on her cell phone an hour past what the cell phone cutoff was.
Mm-hmm.
Additionally, and probably the most important one which relates to that, is to think big. And I guess this comes from my having four children, raising my four stepchildren, and now having one. I am pretty objective about this topic. Think big. Every time you go, it's easy to pick up after one child. Every time you go to do something for your child, put his dishes in the sink, pick up his dirty laundry, think big. In your head, say, would I be doing this if I had four children in the house?
That's interesting.
And the answer is clearly no, you wouldn't. So thinking big, pretending you have a house full of children, will help parents pull back on all the extra help they're giving this one child that they shouldn't be.
That's wonderful. And how about attachment issues? Attaching to other children, socialization?
Well, in that, don't focus on the oneness. Don't be clingy. Give your child room to explore and get out in the world. And probably the best idea is to have interests outside of your child.
Sure.
Volunteer, get a job, paint the house, build the house, do something so that you love, and that so that every single minute of your day is not focused on this child and doing for your child.
Before I ask you to leave us with some tips for the listeners today, I'm wondering what some of the most crucial things you learned while writing all of your wonderful books, 15 books, most of which are on an only child or only children. What did you learn that you really didn't know?
Well, I learned that the stereotypes are exactly that, that parenting style and parenting attitude that helps develop the child. It isn't absolutely not the number of siblings they have. That was interesting to me. And the perception that people have that, and actually I feel like it, at least what I learned was, it's really brainwashing, that believing that siblings are necessary and they're indispensable.
That's an interesting comment. In believing that siblings are necessary.
Yeah, I mean, they're not necessary. I mean, they're wonderful to have if everybody gets along, but they're not essential, which leads me to want to tell you that when parent, you know, everyone says, oh, the only child is going to be left caring for his or her parents when they are ill or aging.
Correct.
The facts are that there's usually one person in the family, when there are many children, who gets the brunt of that care.
Sure.
So it does fall to one person, and in this case, it is the only child. And the only children I talked to, and there were like 250 of them, they all felt, or almost all of them, not 100%, but a lot of them felt, they owed that to their parents because their parents had gone above and beyond to make sure they had fun, happy childhoods and gave them every advantage they could, and taking care of that, taking care of their parents older, was fair payback.
That's very interesting. What one tip would you like to leave the listeners with today?
If you have one child, count your blessings and don't buy into the stereotypes, which date back to 1896 and have no merit in today's society.
Speaking of 1896, what did they believe?
They believed that only children were lonely, spoiled, four-eyed geeks, not in that terminology, but essentially, mm-hmm. and that they had more illnesses than other children, which is totally ridiculous. You know, the lonely, selfish lonely only, that's when those myths actually started. There was a psychologist who did a very faulty study, which wouldn't hold up in research terms or in academic research terms today. And it stuck, and it's just carried on and on and on.
It's quite interesting to know that in so many facets of our lives, the stereotypes just do not match reality, correct? And this is an instance.
They don't match reality, and they don't go away.
They don't go away, you're right.
I mean, look at any cultural, ethnic group and the stereotypes to that, whatever group you pick.
Sure.
They have stuck for decades or hundreds of years.
Sure. We've been talking today with social psychologist Dr. Susan Newman about the one-child family syndrome, actually, but it really isn't a syndrome. It's just the nature of one-child families. Dr. Newman can be found at SusanNewmanPhD.com. Her books are readily available online on Amazon and in bookstores. She can be found on Psychology Today. I want to thank you so much for joining me. This was a very interesting half an hour.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Sima Shapiro, your host of For Women Over 40. Thank you for joining us. Until next time, I hope you take care.